The Free Library of Philadelphia is proud to present a podcast from our award-winning author events series, recorded live at the Parkway Central Library on the Benjamin Franklin Parkway. To learn more about the Free Library, our unique and inspiring collections, and how your contribution can help our programs and services for the community, please visit freelibrary.org.
Thank you all for coming. I just want to get through. My job is housekeeping, so we're going to do a little housekeeping right now. Please don't record this event. We'll be recording it for you, and you can download it for free from our website. Also, if you have a cell phone or anything else that bleeps or beeps or rings, could you please set it to silent now? And I guess, you know, if you can refrain from a lot of flash photography, that would be good as well. I would like to introduce right now Ivy Barsky, who is the director of the National Jewish History Museum.
Good evening. Welcome. I want to first thank Dan for his work on this program and being such a pleasure to work with. He was the point person at the library, and Emily August, my colleague who's in the room somewhere, was the point person for the National Museum of American Jewish History, and they had a fabulous time working together, both smitten. We are thrilled to partner with the library to present acclaimed blogger turned cookbook author Deb Perlman. I want to thank the library's president and director, Siobhan Reardon, for the library's continuing partnership. Thanks also to Susan Gould, who's here this evening from the library, and Andy Kahan. Where this is not the first collaboration that the National Museum of American Jewish History has had with the library this year, and we look forward to many opportunities for future collaboration. I suspect that our museum shares a lot with many of you in this audience. First, that we really love food, that we're smitten with Deb Perlman, and that we consider food a connector across cultures. Food is a central part of our heritage and a way to preserve traditions and transmit them from generation to generation. And I think you might know a thing about that as well. I'm going to leave the full introduction of Deb to Maureen, but it's my pleasure to introduce Maureen Fitzgerald. She has been at the Philadelphia Inquirer since 1986 and started writing about food in 2003. In 2005, she became the food editor just about the time the city's food and dining scene was really exploding, gaining national attention for its growing ranks of cutting-edge restaurants and chefs. In addition to writing, Maureen edits the weekly food section and the Sunday restaurant reviews, which together provide an encyclopedic chronicle of the city's dynamic food scene. She also wrote a blog for the last year about teaching her daughter how to cook. So thank you, Maureen and Deb, and thank you all for being here. We look forward to seeing you at the museum as well. Thank you.
Well, I think with this audience, Deb probably needs no introduction, so I'll keep this brief. Deb is a self-taught home cook and photographer and the creator of the wildly successful smittenkitten.com. And her focus is on, I know it's true, her focus is on stepped up home cooking. She loves to make things with ingredients that you all have in your kitchen so you don't have to go out and buy a million things. She lives in New York City with her husband and her two-year-old son. So I will start just right in with questions because I know we're all anxious to hear things right from Deb. So tell us, when did you really start cooking seriously? At what age?
Like 6 months ago. I'm going to get serious any day now. I'm sorry.
Did your mom cook when you grew up?
My mom cooked, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, my mom, when she got married, she didn't know how to cook. And my dad knew how to cook a few things. So he got this idea in his head that he was going to teach her how to cook. My mom thought that was a terrible idea. I was like, Mom, why is it such a big deal? She's like, have you met your father? So I guess you know what I mean. Have you met my dad? Do you know? If you've ever written about me, he's left a comment on the article, by the way. So my mom kicked him out of the kitchen, and she turned on the TV one day, and there was the French chef, and she was cooking with eggs and onions and butter and asparagus, and my mom was like, that. That is what I want to make. And my mom bought Mastering the Art of French Cooking, and she sort of worked her way through it. I like to call her the Judy Julia Project. And so that was how my mom learned to cook. She's certainly not the obsessive cook that I am, but I feel that I learned from my mom a lack of fear of recipes. Like, if I wanted to make bread, it would be like, okay, let's just get a packet of yeast and make bread. It wasn't like, bread is scary, we shouldn't do this. You know, it was definitely a can-do thing in the kitchen.
And as a young person, did you cook a lot growing up?
No. I mean, I loved to cook, but I was never like you guys. Like, I keep meeting people who are so young, and they're people in high school, and they have cooking clubs. I'm like, I would have loved that. I would have been all over that. But my friends are really not into cooking. I'm not kidding. They use their ovens for sweater storage. And so I didn't really have people in college to cook with. And so it was really later when I had the unpaid audience of my husband around to help with the dishes and carrying the groceries up the stairs and eat half the food so I wasn't stuck with all of it, that I was got much more into it. And I remember quite clearly being like, I'm an adult and I want to make this thing, like salad dressing or roast chicken, and I don't have a recipe for it. And I have recipes. I can Google a recipe, I can open a cookbook, but I didn't have my go-to in my head favorite method, and I felt kind of like at a loss.
And you wanted
it. I wanted that. I wanted that, like the perfect, you know, coleslaw dressing and the best pancake recipe with buttermilk. And my search for those things was really where the site came from. Each one was a different hunt.
And so then when you started all this cooking, did you feel like, I want to document this? And that's how the blog started?
Absolutely. The blog was, I actually had a blog before Smitten Kitchen. It was just Smitten. Like, no kitchen. I didn't. And I would just talk about whatever. But it was going more and more in the food direction. And so I thought it would be great to just have, so I already was basically into the blogging thing, but I hadn't quite solely focused on food yet. And so once I did, it was a natural thing. I think recipes are great. You can Google and get any recipe in the world, but I think the story behind it is as important as the recipe. And not just like, here's why we make it at home, but also like, here's why I use this method and not that method. I feel like that helps us in the kitchen know really what you're getting and not just a list of ingredients. So, mm-hmm.
And did you feel like, I have now found the perfect coleslaw recipe and I want to share it with the world? Was there that part of it?
Definitely. It was like, once I found the perfect coleslaw, I'm like, no, you can't make your coleslaw. You have to make my coleslaw. I'm very bossy. So you're not allowed to make any. And it doesn't mean that there's like eight coleslaw recipes on the site. So it was my favorite for then. And then, you know, a couple years later, I got more into this buttermilk coleslaw. And so, but the thing is, I could say that's the recipe for a more classic one. This is one for so I think there's room for apparently many coleslaws that we can all love. There's room for all of your coleslaws too. But it wasn't just one, but it did start one at a time.
But so when you first started your cooking blog, you were working full time.
I was.
So how many hours a week were you dedicating to cooking and blogging?
Most of the ones that I was supposed to be working. Just kidding. No, I was a terrible employee. So I was when I started the blog, I was an IT reporter, which is like hilarious because my knowledge of IT is like this and my reporting skills are like half an inch larger. And I mean, if you met any of my former coworkers today, they would be so polite. Oh, Deb, she brought in great cookies, you know. I don't think anyone mistook me for being, you know, like the gifted IT reporter, but it was a job. And I worked on the site in the evenings and the weekends. And so, because that's when I was cooking. So it was pretty much, if I was cooking, I was usually working on something I was obsessing over.
And so you would try a recipe, and like when you say nights and weekends, like, would it be like several hours a night and then the entire weekend, sort of feeding into your obsessiveness?
It would be like, oh, honey, I want to make this chicken dish. It should be ready at 6. At 10:30, I was like, do we have any apples? I'm just going to eat my arm for a while. I'm just going to gnaw on this. You won't notice. And then I was like, okay, maybe I need to, okay, just 5 more minutes. And so I would work on it in the evenings. And it wasn't like we would just like eat the same thing each night. It was more like I would make it once and then the next night I'd make something else. And I'd be like, I want to come back to that chicken. I think there's something there. But it was a lot of, like, I would start with a recipe that I understood to be really quite good. And it probably was, but I'm such a pain that I was like, yeah, no, I want. And then I'd be scribbling on it. And so I got in this habit of printing up recipes and magneting them to the refrigerator and then keeping a pen nearby. And that's when I was like, nope. I got a little dramatic with my noping, but that's how I felt about it. Just things were getting messed up. And so...
I think that's one thing that people don't understand. You see this blog post, and it's this big. And what you're saying is that little blog post that's this big, well, yours are probably this big because there's so many photos yes. and so much writing that goes with them. But like that represents hours and hours and hours of trial and error, of trying a different recipe, of maybe making it again so you can get a better picture.
Absolutely. And as you know, as a reporter, it's the shorter things that are the hardest to write.
Exactly.
So, I mean, to actually try to get a recipe down to a manageable size so you don't scare people, but to get all that detail in that I love sharing that I think helps new cooks in the kitchen, such as myself, because many times I'm making something for the first time in my life while I'm trying to figure it out. So you understand too.
So you are truly one of the great success stories, right? You have great photos. You have great photos. You have great recipes, and you have a lovely, engaging writing style.
Thank you.
There's thousands of blogs out there. Do you have any idea sort of what made yours go viral? Was there things that you did to promote it? Did your experience as an IT reporter help?
It's like, no.
It only gave me drive to find another job. Oh, I had really nice coworkers, but man, what I was doing there. I don't know. This is when I usually joke that my mom is like paying everybody to show up, like at a But I've already teased my mom a lot, and she's not here, so that's not really fair, and it's also not true. I actually have no idea. I'm not really good with self-promotion. I don't. I think I got 100 business cards when I started the site, and I probably have 92 of them. I just don't. It doesn't come up. Like, I don't bring it up. This is awkward. It's going to get more awkward.
So you did not work at it.
I didn't work on the promotion part. I worked on the site. I really believe that there's a natural democracy to the web and that if it's good, people will find it and you don't need to shove it in people's faces. Like, mm-hmm. Nobody's going to start cooking from your site because you told them to. They're going to do it because they found it and they wanted something there. So my main goal was to make sure that if you were coming to the site for the very first time and you knew nothing about it, you didn't care about cooking, there would be something there on the top of the page that you were like, wow, I hadn't thought of that. I want to make this. This looks really good. So that was the goal. And that was what I was thinking about with the book, too. I didn't want somebody to just buy it because they liked the site. I wanted it to be able to stand on its own. I wanted it to be, if you didn't know about food blogs or if you never heard of mine or don't care about food blogs, to be able to walk in to a bookstore and open it up and say, leek fritters. I want to make leek fritters. I didn't even know you could make leek fritters. So that's really what I focus on much more than I have to tell more people about this website.
And how long... since you started the blog, did it take before you were like, this might actually work? I might actually quit my job and do this. You've been doing it for 6 years.
I've been doing it for 6 years, and I quit my job after about a year and a half. I was quite poor as a reporter, poor at it and not exactly raking it in. So, you know, sort of breaking even with the site wasn't maybe the big leap that it might be if I was a lawyer. But I did quit my day job about a year and a half, and I was doing contract work. I was freelancing, but I was mostly wanted to try working on the site full time. It was terrifying. I mean, you know, you're giving up your insurance and your security net. Like, I mean... pathetic as it was, this is what I did. And it was sort of scary not to have an office to go into each day. But I think it was really good because I ended up feeling like I got this grant to do whatever I wanted in the kitchen each day, which was really fun.
And at that point, were you getting a lot of media attention? Did you have a lot of followers?
I think so.
Was it already getting traction?
It was getting traction. I mean, it was getting enough traction that I could do it full time. But the process has been very gradual. There has been media attention, which has been lovely, but it's not like it just went from 0 to 60. It was like it was each of the steps in between. So I didn't necessarily notice it growing to the point where maybe there would be a lot of people in one room at one time. I was completely unaware that this would happen before I started the book tour a few weeks ago. So I mean, it was just numbers on a screen. So I didn't know that you would all show up, but you're all very nice. You have excellent hair.
So take us through your routine in your kitchen on a typical day. Do you have like a methodology and lists of things you want to try, or do you just wake up and make what you feel like?
I do wake up and I make what I feel like, but these days it really does take a lot more planning because I have a three-year-old, and it's not just so simple. It's usually you wake up and there's dishes from last night's dinner to do. There's a child to take to preschool and to try to get him to eat his oatmeal, and so all that chaos. But I keep a very long list of things that I'd like to make, and I'd like to, there's sort of like my wish list. Oh, I have so many cookies I want to make this month, guys. I hope I have time to get to them. I have such great plans for us for holiday baking. I could just get back and like, so I have these long lists of things that I've always wanted to make, and I tend to sort of move things around where I'm like, okay, here are my four things I'd love to do this week. And then what I usually do is I start by researching, and I try to write a recipe before, because it's kind of hard to shop if you haven't written a recipe. And so I kind of take my best guess at what I think will work, write a draft, shop it out, and then get started, you know, taking notes the whole time, and then just keep going back and doing as many rounds as I need.
So do you sort of take, for instance, a cookie recipe, a shortbread recipe, and you say, okay, I really want a shortbread recipe, but I want to tweak it this way because I think this would taste really good in it. And you sort of have a basic recipe and then you play around with it?
It's a mix at this point. I mean, first thing, like, let's say I want to make leek fritters. They're in the book. I might start by Googling leek fritters to make sure if somebody's making it really well, I'm not going to really waste my time or your time or my energy making something. So I might start and see if there's a recipe out there. If there isn't, then I might look at my other fritter recipes, just sort of an idea of proportions to get me started, and kind of go from there and adding the flavorings I want. If it exists and it looks quite close to what I was always hoping to make, I will start by making that recipe as is. And I try to start by making it exactly as is. And if it's perfect as is, I'm not going to insult anyone by remaking it. I'm going to say, you should make this leek fritter. It's amazing. But when I don't find what I'm looking for, that's when I get back to the drawing board. And it can come from a mix of being completely from scratch, or usually these days I do have my shortbread proportions that I like. I have a few. It's not just one recipe, but I do look back at recipes I've already worked with and know and like the texture and go from there.
And where in your head does the desire for, I want to make a leek fritter, come from? Is it like,
oh, no,
I love this combination in my head and I think this would be amazing? Is that what it is?
It's like it's a just craving? Just like, yeah, it's hunger.
Yeah.
It's just craving. it just comes at me and I don't know where it comes from. And sometimes I like mishear something that somebody's talking about and I think it's one thing, but it's too late. It's like in my head. Sometimes it's something I had at a restaurant that I really liked, but I wanted it to be different. Sometimes it's something that I thought I was ordering at a restaurant and it was totally different and it wasn't bad, but it's too late. I'm already thinking about how it would be. But it's quite often like a craving, like I'm craving, I want to make a sweet potato fritter with Indian spices. Like I don't, it must be pretty weird up there because I get these strange ideas.
So did you ever take a cooking class? Are you entirely self-taught?
I'm mostly self-taught. I took a bread making class a few years ago, because I felt like there was this big gap. Like, I wasn't where I wanted to be with bread making, so I took this, like, 3-weekend class, and it was really helpful. I would love to, like, go to Italy and take a pasta making class. Like, wouldn't that be,
yes,
like, a real, like,
authentic?
Like, I mean, because I know how to make pasta, and I have plenty of pasta recipes, but I want to, like, hear from the grandmothers how to do it, and how to sauce it just perfectly so it's not drowning in it. Like, there's an art to it that I think that I'm not necessarily going to entirely be able to figure out on my own. But most of it's self-taught. I watched a lot of Food Network. My husband used to call it my stories. I can't talk. Deb is watching her stories. Saturday morning, Ina's on.
What is the secret to becoming a good cook? Do you think that it's an innate talent, or do you think it's a skill that anyone can learn?
I mean, are we talking about good home cooking or good restaurant cooking?
I think good home cooking, because that, I think, is what we're talking about.
I think good home cooking, you can absolutely work it out for yourself. And, you know, it's a mix between the things that you want to make and your audience, too. So it's like, if your family loves everything that you cook, you are an amazing cook, right? I mean, do you have any unhappy customers? No. So you must be amazing at it. if you have a toddler, which means you always have an unhappy customer because it's not pasta. So it depends. But I think it can be learned. I kind of resent the idea that sometimes gets floated around that it's you have to be born with it. I think a good recipe should be able to get you there. I think a really good recipe should be able to take somebody who's totally green in the kitchen, who's never made a layer cake before, and you should be able to follow that recipe to the letter and get the same layer cake as the recipe writer. And if it didn't, I think it's the fault of the recipe writing. Like, I think there's something missing. If there's some place that someone's struggling in one of my recipes, it's a detail I should have added. I don't think it's their fault because they didn't know what whipped butter looks like.
Right. And I think also the more you do it, you know, part of it is confidence.
That too. I mean, without being, because I know there are certain doughs that are always, you know, sticky doughs make more tender breads and they make more tender, light scones. But it's scary. You're like, this is sticking to the counter. I'm going to add more flour to it. And then, you know, you sort of panic. But once you know it's sticky, you're like, oh, okay, let's touch this as little as possible and not fight it. So I do think there's definitely, it gets easier as you've made things mm-hmm. a few times. Mm-hmm. But I still think a good recipe should be able to get you there the first time.
And are you an advocate? I mean, do you feel like you part of your blog is like advocating home cooking and you want more people cooking and, you know, do you feel like living in New York, people are like still marveling at you that you cook in your little kitchen?
They are. And I, you know, I don't, it's not like a soapbox I get on. I don't think that you're going to have a better life if you cook dinner every night or anything like that. I think you should do what makes you happy. But I think if what's keeping you out of the kitchen is an idea that you're not going to get what you want when you come in there, that's where I want to come in, because I think there are recipes. I think recipes can be solutions. I think if you're tired of the chicken you're always eating for dinner, there's a new recipe out there. If you think pancakes never work out, like, there is a recipe. So when I'm more where people think they're not going to be happy with the results, I think there is a way to
you're
do
like
it.
You're like a consultant.
Cheerleader. And I do think you can do it.
I love that.
But I would never sit there and say, if you cook five nights a week, you're going to have a better life. I think you'll have a lot of dishes to do. So, I mean, let's be real.
So, describe your kitchen space for us.
It goes from about me to you, about to the back of this. Is this IKEA lac table? It's just such a shopper. It's a lac. It goes to the back of the lac. It's small. You should never feel bad for a New Yorker who has a small kitchen. That, like, nobody held a gun to my head and said, we need you to pay an astronomical price to live in the worst space imaginable each month. It's a choice, and I choose it. It's not the best kitchen, but we have made peace with each other. it works for me. So I think you really, I mean, no matter what size your kitchen is, you just need to make it work for you. You need to figure out what's taking up space and what you can do. I'm a big fan of pot racks. I'm a big fan of, like, getting things out of the way. And the main thing is, I don't care how big your kitchen is, because I've been in huge kitchens and the counters are just covered with stuff. Like, clear your decks. If you're feeling claustrophobic in your kitchen, just clear your counter and take the canisters off so you can use your space.
And do you lust for a great big kitchen? Do you feel like in my next house I'm going to have like a giant refrigerator?
See you later,
and
little
miles
kitchen.
Of countertops?
I could never even imagine it anymore. I think at one point I've been like, of course, who wouldn't? And now I don't think I need it. I would like to have one more counter than I have, but I don't know that beyond that I need that much more. Yes, I would like some more cabinets. I mean, it would be really great to have some space for my son and husband to hang out with me in the kitchen. I would love an open kitchen so I don't feel like isolated when I'm in there. It's an old kitchen and it's just a doorway.
You have a beautiful window.
I have a window. I mean, I have a window. I have a dishwasher. Oh, God, that makes me so happy. And I have the floor is black and white checkered tile, and it's just cheerful. And the cabinets are white, which I think really helps with a tiny kitchen. And none of these things were chosen intentionally. This is like a rental, and it's a cheap rental, so it's basically like the cheapest stuff they could slap up there. But it works for me somehow. So I would say at this point I'm totally at peace with it, and I'm not looking to trade up. But I don't know that I would automatically move into a kitchen this small again. But I would never give up the window. So, because we actually moved in 2009, and my kitchen is smaller than the first one I had on the site. So I have weird priorities. But it had a window and a dishwasher, so I was distracted. It's nice. I love being able to look out at the corner and, like, see people, like, doing things. Or the other day I heard, taxi! And I was like, is that my kid? Oh, my God, that's my kid. He's hailing a taxi with his dad. It was so cute.
At age two.
Yeah, he's very into it. Stubby little arm. Anyway.
So your photos are so beautiful. But you make it look so easy. It's just like, you know, okay, I'm slicing up this cauliflower for the fritters on your site, and you just snap the pictures as you go along. Is it that easy, or do you have to fuss?
It is exactly that easy. It really is. It's not, I mean, I don't know what the buttons on my camera do. I'm very bad at Photoshop. I actually had to take it off my computer because I was just breaking it, or it was breaking me. I don't really know how to do the fancier stuff that would make a picture look good if it didn't. But at the same time, I just think that I'm aiming for a sharp photo. I want it to be just crisp and sharp, and because I'm trying to show you something that's happening. And so hopefully, I mean, just take a picture, right? I don't even manually focus most of the time. I mean, I'm such a slacker with a photography.
And it's all daylight. You don't ever use light.
Yeah, I just use the window. And I tend to finally get myself together to finish a recipe like right near the end of the afternoon. So I actually love that light in pictures. It's just, it's a little underexposed, but it's sort of glowy, so I like it.
They are beautiful. So I am looking at my watch, and I know a million of you have questions out here. So I just want to say, you know, I know Ree Drummond started just like you, and she has her own cooking show. Is that next on your horizon? Are you open to it?
I mean, I'm not going to say no to any. I also used to say that I was never going to write a book, so I'm going to get in trouble if I say no to things, but it's not my immediate goal. It's not like my plan. I don't need like the moon and the stars. I mean, that's fine this isn't friends with me. I mean, so it's just my interest is like something different. I want to have a good life. I want to take vacations and hang out with my husband and kid and cook the food I like and not be like, you know, so it's sort of like that. My goals in life are a little different, and if a show fit into that and it seemed like fun, I wouldn't rule it out, but it's not like I have to have this. So say
very nice. Okay, I want to open up the questions to the audience. So raise your hand and someone will bring a microphone. Back here. Someone has to bring you a microphone first, I think. Person with the microphone.
I think she's going around the back. Oh, okay. And she's going to come through.
Right here.
Oh, no, there.
Person who has the question, stand up.
I think she's coming around the other side.
Oh, there you go.
Okay, now we're done.
I wanted to know if you're making anything special for Hanukkah this year.
Am I making anything special for Hanukkah this year? I don't know how much that I'm going to have time to make next week because it's really soon. It's this weekend. apparently, I am not. I made some lovely cauliflower fritters. I will probably, there will be latkes before the week is out, and if there's time after that, I really do like to make them with different vegetables because, I mean, toddlers just, it's just, I really like having them around. I mean, I'll use it for anything from a fried egg on top for breakfast to something to eat with a lunchtime salad to something for a snack. So I really like them with all vegetables. There's a cauliflower, but they don't really look like latkes, but there's a cauliflower fritter on the site too, but I like to make it with different things. There's a parsnip and horseradish latke that I made last year that nobody made. Not one of you made it, and I want you to know that I think you should make it. It's really good. It's getting no love. It has like a little like a horseradish cream and a little dill on top, and I think it's a really fun alternative. And it has potatoes in it too. So I'm just going to throw that out there. But I know you didn't make it, and I think you should. It was like a pin. You could hear a pin when I posted it. People were like, yeah, no.
Parsnips just don't have that appeal.
What is that? Who doesn't like parsnips? They're like celery and carrot together. That's not, it's
you're,
not salad,
is it? You're
not
convincing us. You're not convincing
they're
us.
They're rubbery. They're a root vegetable.
Who else has a question? Right here.
Hi, Deb. So when Lindsay, my former roommate, and I first met, we immediately bonded over our obsession with your site. So my question for you is, what is your favorite meal to eat when your best friend comes over and you just veg it out or need some girl time?
Ooh, good question. I think I would probably make a quiche and a green salad. Such typical girl fare, but I just don't find that men get the same level of excitement over it. I mean, my husband will feign it. He'll be like, oh, good, a quiche. And then he'll be like, and? So, but my girlfriends really understand the importance of a good spinach quiche or a good, so I would definitely use it as an excuse to bust out a big fluffy green salad, and then I would make chocolate mousse because we're not really trying to be good. We're just trying to save our energies for the end of the meal. Like the raw eggs and the cream and like the, just the for real thing. Like classic, old school, no corners cut chocolate mousse. Now you want to come over?
How about right over here?
I have a quick question. But first of all, I want to just give compliments to my cousin because she made an amazing parsnip and potato something for our
somebody made
Thanksgiving.
It. Parsnips.
So she did it, and it was amazing. We are actually both new moms, and so what I wanted to know was, what are your tips for saving time when we have, she has a almost 2-year-old, and I now have a almost 3-month-old. And so, yeah, so... And actually, I really am enjoying starting to cook a lot more and more, but just what tips do you have for either maybe taking, like, maybe a knife, like, cutting class, like, just to learn, like, so I can be a little bit faster, or just some tips to, like, try and speed up the process? Because I love cooking, but I'm just not as fast as I'd like to be in the kitchen.
Well, I am a huge slowpoke in the kitchen, and my first piece of advice if you have a 3-month-old is to take a nap. Like, don't, you shouldn't be cooking. But you. No, but no, I'm just serious. In the beginning, it's so hard. Like, you haven't, I mean, it took me far more than 3 months to get back to, like, any kind of rhythm of things. It sounds weird, but you always hear about mise en place, where you're supposed to prep all your vegetables and stuff before, and nobody does that in home cooking. But when the thing with having a kid is you have these irregular interruptions and you never know when you're going to be stopped or there's going to be some, you know, or your kid's going to wake up from their nap unless you have one of these magical 3-month-olds that has regular nap schedule, in which case, just don't even talk to me. Okay, we can still be friends. But that's awesome and you should enjoy it. But I feel like I didn't know when these interruptions were going to be, and so I actually started doing that where if I wanted to make a soup, I would just chop a carrot, put it in a dish, put it aside, chop it, you know, and just do what I could when I could. And then by the time I was ready for the cooking, it was really like, it was all done and it actually went a lot faster. So doing a saute or whatever. So just, and you could, if you're going to want to make something with onions 3 times this week, go chop 2 onions and put it in a plastic bag. And once in a while, if it just got too late and you never got a break to finish it, you can just put a little plastic over each thing, put it in the fridge, and come back tomorrow. And I did that a ton. I mean, I did the cookbook over the first 3 years that Jacob was born. And so, I mean, I think I got better at figuring out where I could pause recipes. And so doing all the prep work before definitely helped. And after that, the slow cooker. The slow cooker is the greatest thing. It's just, you can just set it and you can still make something else. Maybe you use the thing in the slow cooker tomorrow, but you can kind of set it in the beginning of the day. I mean, brisket, chicken, any bean stews, and just, you'll always have this sort of backup meal that keeps really well.
My question for you, Deb, was, so I'm a working mom with a toddler, and I used to make these very thoughtful meals pre-baby, and now when I get home, I feel rushed to get dinner on the table for her, and it's a miracle if I can get dinner on the table that she will actually eat. So
me too, don't worry about it.
Well, that's my question, is other than pasta, she basically will not eat anything. And is there a secret that you have unlocked?
Prayer? No, this is tough because I'm not somebody who is like a professionally in any way. I should not be advocating for this stuff because I don't really know. I'm kind of mean as a mom. I mean, I'm not always, but I sort of feel like if he doesn't want to eat something that I put out, he's just not getting something else. I'm not perfect at this. It feels really hard. And I may not have been as strict when he was two as I am now. But now at this point, I feel like if I try to put out a couple things and only one thing should be a little bit scary or a little bit new. And I just sort of feel like, I don't know. I feel like, I felt like if I got, when, the times when I got into the rhythms of making alternative meals because he didn't like them, I was just making my life so miserable and then just setting it up so he could always reject what was on the table. So for me, it takes sort of a steel reserve sometimes, but to just say like, there's a vegetable that you like and here's another vegetable and here's a meat that you've eaten before. I would only try to put one new or different thing out at a time, and you can eat it or not eat it. And I know that sounds terrible, but I also think there are, you can cook a day ahead. Like the thing that you make this evening after you fed the kid could be your dinner for tomorrow. Again, with the slow cooker mentality where maybe you'll make something tonight that you guys can eat early. And then all you have to do is reheat it in the at dinner time. So you don't have as much cooking to do before if you feel like you have more of a margin of time after dinner. If that wasn't terrible advice, starve the kid out. Starve them out. They will eventually eat. But sometimes
how about
I think
right
that.
Here, this question.
I kind of have a lame question, so I'm going to preface it by saying that I'm a stay-at-home mom of two children under two right now. And when my husband is home around dinner, all I ask is that I can do one of your recipes. Like, that's my treat. And so I often, like, I actually was just showing your cookbook, and there's toilet paper earmarking a page that I read. So anyway, thank you, because I appreciate so much what you're doing, I thoroughly enjoy your sense of humor. So my lame question is, I'm just curious how a blog supports itself, because I don't see annoying advertisements, and I don't see you selling our email. So just curious how you were able to leave your very lucrative job as an IT journalist and become this fabulous blogger that we all adore.
Actually, it's not a lame question. I think it's a lot of people want to ask it, and they like feel like, you know, so it's a good question. And the truth is that blogs support themselves the same way every magazine and every newspaper does. We sell ads alongside the content, and it's really just up to like any website, the owner, the publisher, how much they want to put in. I really try to keep mine as small as possible and subtle. There's no more than two ads on any page, and I've been able to sort of hit a sweet spot with that where I'm happy. Like maybe I could be rich. Maybe I'd have a bigger kitchen if I put more ads on, but I'm pretty at peace with that. So I just try to keep it subtle, really try to avoid the pop-ups. It's like so hard these days, like advertisers for the web do not want to sell anything but pop-ups. But anyway, so I try to keep them peaceful and small, but it's this, and what it is that they pay per impression. And in the same way, like with a magazine, they might set ad rates by circulation. So the idea is that the more people who come, the more, I guess the more money there is to be made from ads. So that makes sense, right? Okay. It's like the same thing as commercials with TV too. It's just, you just sell it right alongside the content.
So just to make a follow-up question, are you making enough money to support yourself? Are you exceeding your IT reporter salary at this point?
Exceeding my IT reporter salary.
There you go.
I'm fine. I can take care of myself.
Someone right there had a question. Did you have a question?
Oh.
Yeah.
Sure.
Can you tell us about a time? I guess I've seen a couple recipes on the site where they haven't quite gone according to plan. I mean, you talk about, I guess, if you have an idea of in your head for something like I really want to make blank, and it doesn't quite work out the first one, two, three, a dozen times. Like, how do you save a recipe? I mean, if things aren't going right, it's not working out. Like, what can you do?
I have a hissy, and I storm out of the kitchen, and I say I'm never going to cook again, and I should never have agreed to write a cookbook. And that goes on for 3 or 4 days. It depends on how frustrated I am, like how big the frustration level is. Often I just need to come back and revisit it later. Sometimes I revisit things a year later. Sometimes I revisit things. There are things I've revisited like 5 years later on the site. There was this mega quiche from Thomas Keller that just bested me, and now I'm like, I got this. Deb won, quiche zero. But it really depends. Now, in the early days of the site, I thought it would be really fun to have like a disasters category where I could say, this is a mess, you know, this was awful. But what happened was sometimes people would make it anyway, and then they'd be like, this was terrible. I'm like, I told you. So, but they still had a bad experience at my, and it was my fault in some way. So I kind of got away from that. Now, in general, when things just went go really badly, it's just not ready yet. We're just going to pause. And sometimes I just get cranky, you know, because like I thought it was going to work. That's the worst. It's like, honestly, the more certain I am that this is going to be a cinch, the more likely it is that I'm going to have to make it a few times. But often I just need to come back to it because, sometimes I really block it out of my head. And I remember one of the recipes I'd hoped to get up for Thanksgiving was I had this like very clear idea of what I wanted a stuffing recipe to be. And I had this weird idea for it that I just can't even tell you about right now. But anyway, so I had this crazy idea and I was working on it and I'm chopping all this stuff and I'm like, oh my God, I made this already. I spent like 6 months trying to put this recipe in the book and it never was right. I couldn't get it right. And then I made it like once and it just turned out there was like too much egg in it. That was it. But I actually even forgot that I'd worked. So I found my notes and I went back and I used that recipe and it was fine. I'm just insane. So it's a process.
Another question right here.
Hi. I've been reading your site since like the very first year that it was out. And when my husband and I got married like 3.5 years ago, your site is the one that like helped us learn how to cook. Like we decided to learn how to cook together.
That's
and
so
your
sweet.
Site is the one that we
Thank
always
you.
Come back to. But my question is, your blog is one of the only blogs that doesn't do reviews of like anything, like gadgets and gizmos, and you know all of the other blogs do reviews of everything. How did you come to the decision to not do those, and to not, you know, kind of spend your time or spend your space doing like using all of the gadgets and then giving them away or whatever?
Well, thank you. I'm glad you noticed. I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing, but for me, it was a decision and it was a choice. This actually might be one of the few things I learned as a reporter. I really like a separation of sort of ads and companies and editorial content. I know that that line is quite blurred on the web these days and especially with blogs, but for me, it's always been very separate. So I just decided my thing is home cooking. I want to talk about recipes and stories and the process of cooking, and I don't want to sell you gadgets, and I don't want to tell you about some sprinkles because I got a sample of them for free. And so I have a no free stuff policy. Like, if there's a book that I've written about on the site, I bought it. And if it's like a friend's book and they snuck it to me, before I write about it on the site, I will give that copy away. And like, I'm a little OC. I'm like a little crazy about this. But I just really like, I feel like if I'm going to even mention something to you, if it's not worth $20 to me, like how could it possibly be worth even asking anyone else to buy it or suggesting implicitly because I liked it that they should? So I just decided I was going to just not have any free stuff. I don't want anybody sending me anything, and I don't want to do any reviews. And I don't think what peeler you use is that important. And I don't think that it matters that you have a really fancy knife. And I don't think that there's one brand of cutting board that's better than other cutting boards. I think it's whatever works for you and whatever works within your budget. And I do have some things that have come up over the years where I'm like, okay, this cherry pitter is like really great. So if you're looking for one, but I don't think that you should feel that you need to buy that to pit cherries because everybody knows you don't need to have it. It's sort of like if you've made 3 cherry pies in a week, you might want to go get yourself. That's basically what happened to me. So I just try to keep it separate, and I think I just decided I want to be bothered with some things, and I don't want to be bothered with some things. So I don't have any strings attached. I don't owe any companies any favors. No, I don't owe anyone a book review, and so it keeps me very free to just keep the space to be what I want it to be.
Over here.
Hi, I just wanted to know, do you throw a lot of food away when you're experimenting and trying to make these recipes up? Because I'm a little nervous about experimenting too much and then just buying all this food and having to throw tons of it away.
I try not to. It happens. It's not the goal. I mean, generally, if something's savory, we ate it for dinner, or we ate it for lunch, or we had it as leftovers the next day, too. If it's sweet, you know, if it's like a birthday cake, it went to a birthday party. If it's a cookie, it went to a holiday party. I tend to try to not keep too much, like, the junk food around for, you know, just because it's dangerous, and then I'll decide that I can have cake for breakfast, which I cannot do. But bless you if you can. But, so, I really don't throw away too much food. There's definitely leftovers that get forgotten and turn into other things that are best forgotten. But for the most part, we do try to just, you know, it's something that I wanted to make for dinner. It's not just something I wanted to make for the site. It was something that I thought my son would enjoy or my husband would enjoy. And the way to ensure that you don't have as many disasters is if you're nervous and you want to try something new, try to just go one step off from the recipe, and then you go two steps off, and you can go very gradually. And even now when I make changes, I usually just try to make one or two at a time, so you know exactly which change. Isn't that like the scientific method? I was so bad at science in school, guys, but I think that's the scientific method, or at least part of it, where you are, oh God, this is, no, it's not, is it? Oh God. Okay, I'm going to just stop talking now. Good night. but you can just make one or two small changes at a time, and it's less likely that it's going to go completely off the grid and end up in the garbage can. Is it thundering every time I talk?
I'm not sure. It might just be the old system.
Okay.
Yeah, echoing.
Cowering in fear.
Go ahead.
How do you shop? Do you think of a recipe first, or do you ever go and do you ever browse the markets that you're close to, or do you ever go to a particular market that you'd like to visit and see what's available and then think how you'd like to use the products or the foods that you see?
Absolutely. It's a mix. In case you guys didn't hear, she asked how I shop. And it's a mix. I love going to the markets and just seeing what looks pretty and trying to work backwards from there. So with produce and things that are locally grown, I like to pick things up because they look good and because they're in season. But for everything else, I mean, I have a grocery list too. It's got flour and sugar and milk and all that stuff. And for that, I might go to a grocery store, or we have some grocery delivery systems in New York City, which are great, which is nice when you want to buy 2 5-pound bags of flour and a gallon of milk and some of the regular stuff I can just kind of have delivered. They have an iPhone app. It's amazing. So I use that a lot for the staples, but I think I really like, I have a lot more fun shopping when I let the market inform me, because when I go in with this idea like, okay, strawberries, and the strawberries are gone. Like, you have to move on. So it's much more fun to say, this was the thing that called to me. And that, I think it keeps the recipes fresher. Also just your inspiration fresher, where you see like, oh, I thought I didn't like kale. Well, let me challenge myself to find a way that I would enjoy it. And so, because it looks good and I want to bring it home.
We have time for just one more question. Oh, yeah. So who has a really burning question that they just can't leave
just
the auditorium
fight it out with somebody
tonight?
Somebody has a less burning question, so you win. You can ask me questions as I'm signing books too. I'm happy to answer anything.
Right here.
Hi. So I actually just sort of found out that I have a gluten intolerance 3 days ago.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. So I was wondering if you've experimented with any sort of non-wheat flours and things, because all of your baking goods are so wonderful but so wheatful. So.
This is definitely a lapse on my part where I haven't experimented so much. I don't mean like I'm sorry, like, oh my God, that's so terrible. I just mean that it's, at first, it's an inconvenience until you figure out how to work around it. But because I am gluten full, you could definitely say, I haven't experimented that much. But I have a lot of friends who are, and I have a lot of people who come back to me when they make something. In fact, almost any recipe on the site, if you scroll down in the comments, somebody has responded with how they gluten-freed it. Like, so it's definitely worth finding. I find that it depends on where the flour is in the recipe and what part it plays. For the fritters, for my favorite brownies that have very little flour in them, look, any gluten-free flour mix that you fall upon that becomes your favorite, whether you mix your own based on somebody's recipe or whether you buy it already mixed from King Arthur or wherever else, will usually work. I mean, I can't tell you absolutely because I haven't used that mix, but for the most part, where the flour is more of a glue or a thickener, it gets trickier with things like a breakfast bun or obviously bread and cakes that are really about the flour and structure. European cakes use a lot more eggs and structure. So when you have a cake with, like, you know, all the egg yolks and the egg whites, it's not the kind of flour you use isn't going to be as essential. So those are sort of the general guidelines. But I think in many cases, it doesn't become a huge problem. It's really the trickiest with pie dough, with yeast doughs. And for those, I would definitely seek out a good gluten-free website or cookbook. But for the small adjustments, I think you'll find that you can make them in your kitchen. I mean, there's some fancy gluten-free flours out there today. Like, there's this cup for cup from Thomas Keller's Kitchen. So it costs a fortune. I mean, it's crazy. So you might buy a couple bags of that and use that for the birthday cake you can't live without, but that doesn't work. And I understand that emulates white flour quite closely, but you'll probably find that it's a great excuse to try out a lot of whole grain and other types of flours that might not have made it in so much to your cooking otherwise, and you might really prefer them because there's a lot more flavor to be had than there is in generic white flour.
And I think you have a recipe for gluten-free chocolate financiers
And that is from Gluten Free Girl, which is one of the first gluten-free blogs. And then there are things that are sort of almost accidentally gluten-free. But
macaroons.
Exactly, that just happen. And, of course, there's a whole past of our archive, though some of them have matzo meal in them, but most of them, I find matzo meal can be kind of terrible. So I usually just try to focus on things that don't have flour in them. Sorry, matzo meal, it's just... No. but I think you'll find your way around it, and you'll get there. And the cool thing is, there are just so many resources. Because I know I'm friendly with Shauna Ahern from Gluten Free Girl, and when she started, you know, there was nothing out there. She didn't know where to go, and now, you know, there's just so many resources. So I think you'll be all right.
There are a couple of gluten-free bakeries in Philadelphia. Sweet Freedom is one, and another one is, I want to say, Tito in South Philly makes really great baguettes. So you're going to be okay,
And when you come to New York, I mean, literally within three blocks of my apartment, there are two gluten-free bakeries and a gluten-free pizzeria. They have gluten-free, dairy-free, vegan pizza. I'm like... But
what is in that pizza?
I don't know. I didn't ask. But it's supposed to be really good. So they really have everything in New York.
I am getting the high sign that it's time for us to call this to a close because Deb is going to be out there signing books.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you very much for coming, and thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Free Library of Great Conversations. If you live in Philadelphia or are planning a visit and would like to attend an author event, information on the series is available at freelibrary.org/authorevents.